This is Bob.
And this is Andrew.
This is Comparing Apples to Oranges, a podcast where we take two things in the same category that don't belong in the same genre and compare them using a set of criteria to decide which one's better. Got Bob's brand new show. Well, hey, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me today.
So excited that you're here. And Andrew, you're an old hat this thing, right?
I'm back. I'm back for number two.
Andrew is dressed to the nines because he is here to party. And I've heard you have some thoughts. Is this true?
I have thoughts today. I have thoughts.
Okay, good. So these two suggested this category today. We're doing live albums. Not albums by the band live because I don't think they have two albums. And if they did, I wouldn't want to listen to both of them. I want to listen to that one about lightning crashes. That one's okay.
Thank you for not making it live albums.
Although, what if it's live albums that are performed live? That'd be like...
You're getting very meta.
Through the looking glass.
There you go. No, I wouldn't want to do that either. I don't think I'd want to hear them live. But anyway, so what do you guys think of when you think of live albums? What are you looking for in a live album?
I'm looking for energy. Mm-hmm. Well, not only from the band, but from the crowd.
Yes.
Crowd interaction, participation, or some sort of imparted energy to the band from the crowd.
Right.
And hopefully some creativity on the band's part. Something, renditions of the song that are different than the studio recorded versions.
Yes. I'm completely on board with that. Andrew, what did you kind of helped pick live albums, right? Well, you wanted to do Heat again.
Yeah, well, I just always want to talk about the movie Heat, so... No, I agree. I think, I guess what I look for in live albums is what I look for when I go to concerts,
okay.
Which is, I always like to see how a recorded track conveys to a concert, a live performance, and songs that I thought were great on the album, and I hear them live, or I see them live, this is for earbuds.
Right.
And then I hear a song that, you know, I've listened to 20 times and I hear it live, I'm like, oh, this is a banger.
Right.
This thing just plays
right
to a live crowd. So I'm always, and so it's kind of like what Bob said, I'm looking for how they've kind of enhanced their music or changed it in some way for a live performance.
Now, I always look forward to when a band does something, like they do a new song, so like a cover, or they'll do like a rendition of a song acoustically, or they'll do something that's totally unexpected.
Like a white indie rocker covering Drake?
Spoilers!
Hello.
But I remember, like, that's what you look forward to. Like, Yonder Mountain String Band did a cover of, like, a Bob Marley song. And you're like, that makes sense. No, but it's fun. You know, it's, like, unexpected. And you get to sort of meet the personality of somebody that you think you know because you've listened to their studio album, but in a live way, usually, like you said, you get that energy that you can't really replicate on a CD.
Yeah, to add to that, when you get an acoustic version or a cover or simply a song played in kind of a new rendition.
Like a remix? No. That's a
remix
joke.
Tune.
Drastically different song.
I feel like you get to learn something about the band and how they approach their craft. And you listen to a song on the radio, or you know, you listen to a CD, or you hear the studio version. It's the same thing every single time.
Right.
And that's how that band wanted to record that song, theoretically. But when you go see it live and it's different, you go, oh, so that's, they hear that song differently sometimes, or they wanted to explore that with this song.
Very, yeah, of course. And so also, like, a band that I really like, Modest Mouse, I saw them live and they had two drummers, and then they did like a 16-minute medley of three songs that were on different albums, and I had no idea that they were going to perform. I mean, I just wanted to hear the songs that I knew by them, and then I walked away, I'm like, these guys are really good showmen. And you don't think of that from, are they like progressive rock or like alternative rock? The show they put on blew me away. And I don't think that I could capture that on a CD the same way, because they have like the Baron Von Bullshit Rides Again. And it's pretty good because he has some like witty banter back and forth, but it's just like the energy that you get out of this band that's usually very like introspective and like intentionally weird. Like, I was blown away with their performance. And I think that's what live albums sort of give you an opportunity to, witness something different from a band that you think you know really well.
Yeah, that's surprising. I mean, to me, Modest Mouse is like the definition of indie rock.
Yeah.
Just, you know, single songs,
right.
Little weird.
Right.
Song starts, song ends.
Right. No, it's it was something else. I recommend it. Come to Lou Fest. Heads up. So,
are they?
Yeah, they're one of the headliners.
Modest Mouse and
one of the headliners.
Richard McDonald.
Well,
and T-Pain. You know, all the greats are coming. I'm sure there's somebody else in there too that you guys will like. But anyway, so we picked Pearl Jam's the alternative rock grunge hard rock band, originally from Seattle, Washington. That's where they're out of.
Yeah, band formed in Seattle. Yeah.
We listened to their live album Let's Play 2, which was a live album. Apparently it also there's a concert film that goes along with it.
So actually, yeah. I think this was a two-disc live album. I think the one we listened to was actually music from the DVD.
Oh.
The video, because I'm pretty sure the actual album is two discs, and we only had 17 tracks, so I think this was supposed to be part of their...
It also says that this was Pearl Jam's two-night stint at Wrigley Field,
yeah.
So it might have been
yeah.
recorded.
So it was definitely recorded over two nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was done... so this was done in 2016 during the Chicago Cubs, when they ended their 108-year World Series drought.
I did not know that.
And it says, the Cubs' World Series win was especially meaningful to Eddie Vedder, the lead singer, a lifelong Cubs fan who grew up in the outskirts of Chicago, which I had no idea.
He was a Cubs fan.
I did not know that. Because
he would go to the spring training.
Oh my gosh, right?
God, he's been going to spring training for a long time.
That's crazy. Yeah, so the footage and songs were recorded at the band show, Wrigley Field. So, and you, once the songs, like, you sort of pick up on it, he does some banter with the crowd and talks about it. And he also has written a song called All the Way, which apparently is also known as Someday We'll Go All the Way, which is he written and performed by Evanston, Illinois native and Pearl Jam vocalist Eddie Vedder about the Chicago Cubs. Parentheses, they suck really, really bad. So, like, I think that's what is hard for me to enjoy. His love of the Cubs, because I know he has such bad taste in baseball.
Like, I always say that fact going counter to my enjoyment of the album.
Can I ask you a question, both of
yeah.
you? Yeah. Were you guys fans? Are you guys fans of Pearl Jam?
I'm fans of certain songs. Like, I like some of their songs, but I would not. I have not been to any of their live shows, and they are coming. Like, they go tour all the time, apparently.
I love Pearl Jam.
Okay.
I think they're
are you a jam
wonderful.
Head? Is, what do they call you guys? Pearl Boys?
A Pearl
Juggalos? No, wait, no, because I consider myself a child of the 90s. I was born in 86, but
mm-hmm.
you know, all my formative years for the, you know,
when you started listening to music that was
yeah,
good.
Is
yeah.
the 90s.
Right.
And I just I don't know. I never was a Pearl Jam fan, and you know, there's certainly songs that I heard on this album
mm-hmm.
where I was like, oh, I didn't even know this was Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how, I guess, I wouldn't say disinterested, but just not aware of their catalog or the songs that were popular. And I don't know, for some reason, the early 90s to me, it was dominated by Nirvana for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though
right.
it's almost kind of like they're, you know, they're from Seattle, they're from the same...
Mm-hmm.
alternative scene
right.
that kind of comes up at the same time
mm-hmm.
but I guess I for some whatever reason I was never and then I looked at their album sales and
yeah.
I mean they were hugely popular this
yes.
is like and I just I feel like I missed out on all of this
yeah.
so
well I didn't go to any concerts in the 90s like
no I was concert free in the 90s
yeah and so like I think that's when you get a scope of how big a band is when you participate in the fandom in that way. But I think that, like, Nirvana and Pearl Jam were doing two very different things. Like, Pearl Jam was keeping up with, like, the tradition of classic rock in a lot of ways, and Nirvana was trying to reinvent that in a lot of ways.
I completely agree with that. I don't understand what, and maybe Bob, you can tell me this, like, what makes this alternative? You introduce them as, like, an alternative
mm-hmm.
grunge band, and I listen to this, and I'm like, this is just straight up rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's purely... out of the scene,
yeah,
that they were in the Seattle scene. I know one of Pearl Jam's few drummers played with Soundgarden, I believe.
Okay.
So yeah, they came up with Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, mm-hmm. and Pearl Jam are like your big four Seattle grunge.
Right.
But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, their first two or three albums, it's classic rock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's big arena rock.
Mm-hmm.
Guitar solos, big choruses.
Maybe
it's wonderful.
Sort of like, you could sort of look at, so their album 10, they've got like Alive, they've got Black, they have Jeremy. So maybe it's more mm-hmm. like the content. Like, they weren't talking about like how much drugs they were doing or like, you know, their rock and roll lifestyle. They were talking about like things that were important to them, or, you know, like I said a little bit earlier about Modest Mouse, like introspective. So maybe like yeah. the content, not so much the skill, because like everybody, like they were shredding, you know, their drummer was clearly had some chops, and like, you were joking about Eddie Vedder's voice.
Well, this is a serious question.
Yeah.
Does Eddie Vedder have a good voice? I'm just throwing it out there. I think he's considered to be a good vocalist.
Does the question, does he have a good voice, even matter when it comes to frontmen?
That's what I said.
Because he is a rock god, yeah. indisputably.
Yeah.
Your mileage may vary.
So the question isn't whether or not it matters. The question is, does he have a good voice? And I have, after listening to this album probably three times now, because mm-hmm. I didn't know we were recording this song, I've listened to it multiple times to remind myself.
Same.
I think he does have a good voice.
Yeah.
I love his voice. And not only because we share a similar register in our singing voice, that kind of baritone-y
mm-hmm.
range, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which will not be the case for Sufjan here in a moment.
And that's the thing, is like, that's the whole point. Like, rock and roll, you've got, you know, Robert Plant, who intentionally tries to be weird, mm-hmm. and then you've got like Bon Scott / Brian Johnson from AC/DC, who's like artificially high,
mm-hmm.
and so you don't need, that's the whole point, is if you bring the authority, it doesn't really matter your skill level. You have to be able to sustain singing, though. Like, you
yeah.
have to...
Oh, yeah. And I've heard Vedder compared through. To, I mean, as far as classic rock vocalists, mm-hmm. Like a Jim Morrison.
I can see that. Because Jim Morrison does some talking, but he also, like, when he decides to, does a really good job.
He can wail.
Yeah.
And on the next podcast, why the Doors aren't any good. we'll save that.
The movie The Doors? They had a question about the Lizard King last night. We got that one.
Oh, great.
Okay, so that's Pearl Jam's alternative rock anthem, Let's Play 2, their live album. Just sort of like a smattering. It's 17 tracks long, approximately 89 minutes. So pretty good, like, this would be a good length for a concert, I think. As if, like, I'm sure they took out, like, all the little stuff in there, because it sounds like there was a lightning storm, according to
when they come back for release,
uh-huh.
He mentions basically there was a storm, there was uh-huh. lightning, so they had to come off stage.
That's insane. But they hit up a lot of their albums. I noticed that they didn't have the songs Even Flow and Daughter, which I think are like another really important, like, noticeable pair that they always hit.
Pantheon Pearl Jam songs.
But then they also just, like, leave off four of their very, like, not well-known albums. They missed No Code, Binaural? Is that how I say that? Riot Act.
Binaural?
Yeah. And Backspacer, which I couldn't tell you anything about those. And then they threw in a couple of covers for you, so sort of mix it up. We've got Sufjan Stevens, who... according to Wikipedia, is indie folk lo-fi, which that's a category of artists, apparently.
Yeah, sure.
We listened to his live album.
I think that's definitely changed over the course of his catalog.
Yeah.
Yeah. They said specific albums are lo-fi, not this.
Right. They mentioned that, too. They said this is a drastic... So we listened to Carrie and Lowell, the live album, which was a live album, and again, a concert film. So... we totally missed that part of the multimedia, which was released April 28, 2017. It was recorded live at the North Charleston Performing Arts Center in South Carolina in 2015 during his Carrie and Lowell tour. The performance was filmed and features many new interpretations, reworkings, and expansions on that specific album. Although they did throw in a couple songs from his most recent album before that, Age of Ads. Is that how he said
Age of Ads.
Age of Ads. It was basically track for track from the original album, the studio album, Carry and Lull, but he...
Starting with the second track.
Yeah, he mixed up the order a little bit and then threw in two songs from his last album. This was his sixth concert tour, and the tour supported his seventh studio album, and the tour began spring of 2015. Stevens played over 100 shows in North America, Australia, and Europe. They also mentioned that the title refers to his stepfather, Lowell, who helped co-found Stevens' record company, Asthmatic Kitty, and his the songs were inspired by the 2012 death of his mother, Carrie, and family trips they took to Oregon in Stevens' childhood. They mentioned that his mother had depression, schizophrenia, and suffered from substance abuse, as well as at one point abandoning him when he was a year old.
And died of cancer.
Yeah. So this is pretty some sad, heavy shit for you.
And I meant to ask both of you this for Pearl Jam, but it applies to Sufjan as well. Have you seen either artist or group live?
I have not, for both of them.
I haven't seen either live.
So I've seen Sufjan Stevens live twice.
Okay.
Once when he was touring for Chicago, or I guess it was Illinois.
Come on, Illinois. Yeah.
and then I saw him for the Age of Ads.
Okay.
All right.
And I have some thoughts.
Good.
Like, as I've said.
So, again, this album is 16 tracks long and coming in just about 88 minutes, so they're really similar in length. But I do want to point out that the live album is almost double the length of the original studio album that the tour is named after. So that's kind of interesting that, like, he took a 44-minute CD and turned it into an 88-minute live album, which is kind of cool. We're going to talk about these...
Some of that is economics, though. If someone came out for 45 minutes and I dropped 40 bones to see them and they left, I'd be like, excuse me.
This is pretty lo-fi. So we're going to come back in just a second to talk about the criteria we're going to use to discuss which live album is better. Sufjan Stevens or Pearl Jam. Okay, we're back. Now we're going to talk about the four criteria that we're going to use to decide which live album is better. So, whenever we come up to albums, we always talk about re-listenability. You could sort of put recommendability in here too. So which one would you tell people? You're like, hey, this is a great live album, check it out. Both of us, or all three of us, have listened to both albums more than once, so we can sort of give that true test to re-listenability. I think that's good. Then we talked about the live experience. So either one of you want to talk about that?
Yeah, live experience.
Yeah.
Both albums were pretty great in that regard. I'm going to give the edge there to Sufjan, though. It was really just phenomenal sound quality on that album. You could hear all the instruments, the strings sounded amazing, the synths, the choral swells, and I felt like it flowed better song to song.
I think it's really cool that he brought every single thing with him that he used in the studio, and then brought more to it.
The amount he just has on an album, on a studio album, is incredible, and then, yeah, to even add more is inconceivable.
Right. So what do you think about live experience? Where are you putting this one? Who gets this award?
So... Let me take you on a brief detour here, because I think you need to understand my...
One of the thoughts you've been having?
Maybe.
Thought alert.
But you need to understand, I guess, my experience with Sufjan Stevens from an album-to-album experience, because I started listening to him... I think Michigan came out in, like, 2003. I think I started listening to him in 2004, 2005, either just before or right when Come On, Fill It, Illinois came out.
Right.
Then I listened to Michigan. I had listened to Seven Swans, which is, I think technically it came up before Michigan, but I don't think it's really considered his first album.
Mm-hmm.
And really fell in love with him.
Yeah.
The sound, really everything, because, you know, he has this fantastic falsetto that he uses as an instrument,
right,
that is part of his songs. They are deep, they are touching. I bought his B-sides. I bought his, like, four-disc Christmas album.
They're so good!
Yes,
the Christmas stuff is so good.
And then the Age of Ads came out.
Yeah.
And this, it was so antithetical to the person he was,
right.
the musician he was.
Okay.
And I had waited, like, 5 years for this album. He went away. He did, like, an orchestra
right.
dedicated to the Queens Bridge Expressway or the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, something ridiculous and
yeah.
esoteric. And then he comes back, and I don't have any problem with an artist evolving from album to album with their sound changing,
mm-hmm.
but this was just such almost a betrayal of
mm-hmm.
his sound. He took what was beautiful and the subtlety of it, and then he added just all of this electric shit
yeah.
on top of it.
Okay.
And
not
so,
just a 180.
Yeah. So I mean,
beyond
I really want to play you just a song off the Age of Ads so you understand just how much is going on in these kind of tracks.
But I feel I've known you. I feel I've seen you. When the earth was split in five.
The live experience is both a mix of the two Sufjans, is
mm-hmm.
what I would say. It's his prior self, and I think this Carrie and Lowell, the album, kind of got back to his roots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like a folk indie rocker,
mm-hmm.
but some of the live elements of it give me PTSD
okay.
back to the Age of Ads,
mm-hmm.
and it's like you're ruining this otherwise amazing song. Or he would play one of the... one great track would follow with another one. It was just like, no, this is
right.
this is not. It's almost impure.
Right.
You're ruining the best parts of you. So I had mixed feelings of that because I carry some perspective
sure.
into listening to this album.
But you saw Age of Ed's concert, right?
Yeah, it was terrible.
Okay.
It was awful.
Because you expected the live show to be better than the album.
Well, no. So I saw Sufjan touring on the Illinois album
mm-hmm.
in 2006 in New York City,
mm-hmm.
someplace kind of in a theater sort of off-Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He had almost a full orchestra up
right.
there with him. He was true to the album. It was an unbelievable live experience.
Yeah.
And then I saw him in a much smaller venue in Kansas City when he was touring on the Age of Ads.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like,
hmm.
I don't know, it's just, it was... very purposely trying to be artsy
right.
and almost thought too much of itself. It was trying to be something it wasn't.
Right.
And the electric overlay when you went from this like orchestra sound
mm-hmm.
to this electric sound,
right.
computer generated, that's what I didn't like. And he does that with some of the tracks on this album.
Yeah, it absolutely adds some synths that were not there in the studio album, which, now if I could speak a bit about my Sufjan experience, I wouldn't consider myself a huge Sufjan fan.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it wasn't too long after Illinois came out was when I first listened to him, and that to this day is one of my favorite albums for that entire period of music. Or indie rock, indie
mm-hmm.
pop, whatever you want to label it as. It's a wonderful, beautiful album. And then Age of Ads came out, and I'm like, this isn't what I'm listening to before. I'll kind of forget you. The Christmas stuff was good, though. So
mm-hmm.
I still listen to that around Christmas time. Had kind of lost touch with Sufjan for a little bit, and then we decided to do this episode. I listened to the studio version of Carrie and Lowell, and I, like, cried myself to sleep listening to it.
Yeah.
Not to sleep, but...
Yeah, not some
it,
intense
it is
stuff.
A beautiful
yeah.
album, and, I mean, heart-wrenching.
Yes.
Thought the live album didn't necessarily hit the same emotional heights, but was still a great listen.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's a little bit of a teaser. So the first track on this album, the Carrie and Lowell live album, is a song called Redford,
mm-hmm.
which is actually a song from his Michigan album.
Oh.
And on the album version of this song is like just over 2 minutes, and
okay.
it's all instrumental
yeah.
as it is live.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little longer, the live version. It's about 3.5 minutes, but it's like, it's the most, it's this very simple
mm-hmm.
piano,
mm-hmm.
essentially mixed with his falsetto voice, giving this very emotional, powerful 2 minutes. And when he started with that, I was like, this is taking me back.
Right.
This is like so powerful. And I thought that's what we were going to see more of in the album. And some tracks are like that. And some tracks are definitely, I think, actually better live than some of the recordings on Carrie and Lowell. Speaking of that, the song Carrie and Lowell, I thought it was, it is, was more dynamic live. So that's what, that's just kind of where I'm coming from there. But the original question, now that we can detour back to the main road.
That he had some thoughts.
Which was, which album has...
the best live experience.
Yeah, the best live experience. I guess that's really for the listener. Because if you really love Sufjan's music, you might like that better. If you really love Eddie Vedder's voice or Pearl Jam. So I'm kind of punting on this one, but... I mean, I enjoyed them both, I think, from a live perspective. I think they both did interesting things, and I agree with everything Bob said about the sound quality. Now, I do think on some of the songs on Pearl Jam's album, one of my big pet peeves is, like, if I go to a concert and everyone is singing the lyrics to a song, and I can't actually hear the vocalist, and a couple times on the Pearl Jam album, like,
multiple
Better
times.
Man,
she lies and says she's in love with him. Can't find a better man. She dreams in color, she dreams in red. Can't find a better man. Can't find a better man. Can't find a better man. Yeah, yeah.
Live.
You put the microphone out to him.
Oh,
I don't want
the chorus
to. I don't want to listen to these people.
Yeah.
Right. Which kind of makes a difference between attending the concert and listening to it as an album.
Right.
If I'm going to go home on a Saturday or whatever and put on an album, I'm putting on Carrie and Lowell. I want to go to the Pearl Jam show. I'll be out there. I'll be singing all those songs along with them. I'll be air guitaring with Mike McCready. In that regard, the pure rock energy that they bring, it's almost unparalleled.
Right. So, Andrew, I'm going to put you down as Sufjan for that, right?
Yeah, I guess, because I have more of a longer history with Sufjan. I'd be going to Pearl Jam for fun more than, like, interest.
The experience. Yeah. So I'm going with Pearl Jam as the best experience because I personally love hearing how psyched up the audience is. I don't think we heard a lot of clapping at the Sufjan concert, and I don't think that was on accident. I think they edited it out. And
it's possible. I feel like there was, like, just at the end of each song, some polite clapping, and then the next song would start.
And it's really hard to capture the energy of an audience listening to a song called Death with Dignity when it's like 4 minutes out the gate, you know? And that's not to say that, like, so I hadn't heard Vesuvius or 4th of July before, but
yeah, the 4th of July, talk about an uplifting
holy
song,
cow.
Boys.
But that's the thing,
really,
like, that's, that song kicked a lot of ass too.
Well, like, yeah, you have like, people harmonizing the lyrics "We're all gonna die" repeatedly for like 2.5 minutes. You're like, this is morbid, but god damn, this is beautiful.
It's so good. But in a lot of ways, like, you were seeing that with, like, the songs Pearl Jam singing, like, when people are singing along with Jeremy, you're like, he spoke in class today. He bit the teacher today. Like, but that's the thing is,
especially in 2017, 2016 when they recorded, woo, school shootings.
Yeah. He spoke in class. Yeah, that's what it was intense, all right? But I just appreciated, like, what they put forward in their live album to the point where, like, they talked about the guy who, like, stayed in, he was the first person in line 4 days ago, and he's going through some stuff.
John in the front? Where's John? Just want to point out someone here in front, because he was the first guy in line 2 days ago. 4 days ago. And he wanted to be in front for this song because it meant a lot to him, and he's just gone through some stuff, and we're going to help him out, and we're going to...
And it's just like, I'm getting the rapport of that experience. And I look forward to that. And like, that's what I look for in a live album, is those glimpses of what it might be like at a concert.
Yeah, so. I do agree that the Pearl Jam album brought an A-plus crowd game.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd interaction, the call and response during
right.
Corduroy.
But like
Eddie
you said,
holding the microphone out to sing the chorus of Alive.
But like you said, that's it's comes down to taste when it comes to, or preference when you're like, hey, I want this at a concert, not a live album.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you're like, if I could just go to this concert, especially because both of these artists are still touring, which is bananas, which is good though, because Andrew's like, I want to listen to new music. And we decided to listen to a band that you didn't know existed in the 90s and a band that you've seen twice live. And I'm like, oh, sorry, Andrew. It's new to me, though, so that's important. All right, so next we've got the diversity of songs on the live album. When I go to a concert, I don't expect to hear one album played, like, track to track. But I also don't want to just hear the hits. Sometimes I want to hear the ones that I know because I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm really into hearing anything that could be different than what I expected to hear. And so if that means like they have written a song just for tonight and it's never going to be on any album, like that's, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Neutral Milk Hotel, but every time Jeff Mangum shows up, you don't know what you're going to get, but he's always sick. On every live album I've ever heard, he's just like getting over a cold. The next one, he's like fighting bronchitis, and you're just like, what's going on with this guy? And that's maybe why he stopped touring. But like, he's like, okay, this is, you know, a different part of a song that I want to play. I haven't finished it yet. And it's just like, that you're getting something special, that it's sort of like a reward for being a fan. Like, you came out, you wanted to listen to something besides just a studio album. And this is what you get.
Well, and I think it depends on, I mean, the artist has to be aware of what the concert goers want, because, you know, if you go to a Pearl Jam concert, if they, I don't know if the last time they had a new album is, but I can assure you it probably wasn't as good as their
yeah.
early stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And
yeah.
so if you're going to a concert, like, in that scenario, I think you're like, okay, maybe one, two songs, mm-hmm. top tracks of this last album, but then you want to hear the hits.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have, I think this is easier for earlier artists to be like, no, I just released this album, my catalog's not very big,
mm-hmm.
and I thought this album was really good, mm-hmm. and I think that's why these people are here. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I saw Bon Iver recently for the second time touring on his third album. And
he's only done three?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, Justin Vernon is in other groups.
Gotcha.
And still
okay,
with
okay.
other people.
That must
but,
be. Okay.
But hit Bon Iver, that group of guys led by Justin Vernon, is they're on the third album. And he played the third album cover to cover.
Wow.
And there was no deviation.
Yeah.
The encore were
mm-hmm.
three of his hit songs
okay.
from a previous, but he yeah. played it all the way through, and
uh-huh.
it was amazing.
Yeah.
So I really just think it depends, kind of where the artist is in their
catalog.
In their career.
For sure, for sure.
Because, like, no offense, Eddie, if I were to go to a Pearl Jam concert, like, all right, let's hear Better Man. Yeah. I hear that on the radio.
He definitely did not disappoint.
Or it's like, I can see people, like, if he went to a Coldplay concert and they didn't play, like, Clocks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, come on.
Like,
similarly, at last year's Lou Fest, back to back, Run the Jewels and Huey Lewis and the News play. That's where the Jewels comes out. They play Run the Jewels 2, songs off of 3, you know, maybe one or two off the 1. And it was wonderful. It was everything I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Huey Lewis comes out.
Back to the Future.
Better fucking play some songs from
Back to the Future. Let's go, buddy.
Like, what about The Power of Love? We're like, we know that one,
yeah,
too.
Let's go. Yeah.
They all kind of sound the same.
Play it twice. I don't care.
And that's what, also at Lou Fest last year was Snoop Dogg. And he refused to disappoint. He did not know how to disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
He wore an Ozzie Smith jersey. He still had the Snoop Lion dreads. And he's like, I'm going to sing every song you know.
Smoking blunts on stage.
Just one. But it was a big one.
It took the whole show.
But he's like, I'm going to sing a song by Notorious B.I.G. And now I'm going to sing a song by Eazy-E. And now I'm going to sing some of Tupac. And now I'm going to play that Katy Perry song that I only sing that one part on. So he held the mic out and he's like, you know the words, because he legally wasn't allowed to sing the California Girls part. So that's a performer, okay? His catalog was too thick. He's like, how do I go through this? And he's just like, I think you're here for the artist. So I'm going to give you some of me, and I'm going to give you some of the hits. And I think it's a hard line to walk. Like, I heard somebody went to a Red Hot Chili Pepper
concert,
and they're like, they played nonstop for 3 hours, and I didn't hear all the hits, but I heard some of them. It's like, because it started like 83.
And then 15 albums.
Yeah. And some of them are double albums, you know, and so it's just one of those things where you leave it up to their hands. So who did you think did the best job with the diversity of songs? Whether that's how they played it, where they put the order, like
limited experience here for me with Pearl Jam again, mm-hmm. but I thought they were pretty faithful to the original recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Like it sounded, they
mostly,
sounded like they were on the radio
and
to me.
Apparently. Their song Crazy Mary, which they did not write, it's a cover. They play that all the time at live shows. They even had the crowd singing that.
Yeah.
They have like a tracker on their website. They said they played it 161 times at live shows. So I don't know what their full connection to that song is, but it was written by Victoria Williams, is according to Wikipedia. I was not able to do more research than that. All right.
But I thought, so for diversity, I know Pearl Jam selected songs from multiple albums
because they had multiple albums.
But Sufjan does too.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the way Sufjan changed a lot of his songs was more interesting. It was new but
diverse.
Diverse. And I've already mentioned I thought Carrie Ann Lowell, he really made it a kind of a somber live song, and it was like a big audience song to me on the live album.
And like you mentioned earlier, Drake just dropped in some
Hotline
Bling.
His encore was Hotline Bling, which I did not enjoy 1 minute of.
No!
But it was diverse.
Yeah.
No,
diverse as hell.
And added a few minutes of levity at the end there,
I guess. Yeah. If it was a good cover.
I hope he wasn't asking, do you remember when his mom called him on his cell phone?
No.
That'd be too sad. He's like, I do. I thought this song was about death, too. All right, so, Bob, where do you want to weigh in on diversity?
Diversity, I mean, what Andrew said about Sufjan, it's definitely right. And it's, when you're going to the show, it's on the Carrie Ann Lowell tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like you kind of know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he adapted, added to, kind of tweaked some of the existing songs was really nice. But I feel like by default, you got to give it to Pearl Jam. And not just because they literally played a wider variety of albums.
Mm-hmm.
They played most of the hits off of, I think was probably pretty widely considered like their holy trinity of great albums.
Yes.
Ten, Verses, and Vitalogy.
Mm-hmm.
Those were their three massive selling albums. After that, the band, they basically became anti-rock stars after Vitalogy, did their big Ticketmaster fight.
Right.
Had to build their own concert venues so they could play shows, stopped making music videos, and started exploring different, you know, they turned into a folk band for one album.
Yeah, that's everybody.
You get that old, you just start doing it. But they also, they did tweak some of the song. Like, Corduroy adds a fantastic guitar solo, which just wasn't there in the studio recording.
That's on the last half of the song, right?
Yeah, the last half of the song was just wild. Alive had a nice extended guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really liked Release Live. I thought that, like, to me, that was where the album didn't cross the line of, like, just, like, concert-goer vocals
mm-hmm.
being picked up too much.
Mm-hmm.
But you could just tell the energy. And he had a little
right.
intro to
mm-hmm.
that song, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he adds All the Way, which
yeah.
I don't think any of us here are too partial to.
I mean, like,
I'm sure the crowd enjoyed it a lot at Wrigley.
Yeah, they do credit it with the winning, the reason they won. So it's
well,
bittersweet to us.
All right, never
all
mind.
These
I'm not a
like...
Pearl Jam fan.
Let's play two, beaming 200 years in the same ballpark of diamond and our jewel, the home of our joy and our tears, keeping traditions and wishes made new, a place where our grandfathers, fathers, they grew, a spiritual feeling if I ever knew, and if you ain't been, I am sorry for you, and when the day comes for that last winning rod, I'm crying and covered in beer. I look to the sky and know I was right today. Tommy will go all the way. Yes, Tommy will go all the way.
With the newer songs that they added, I feel like the album had just a nice even flow to it.
Oh boy.
it did a really great job of demonstrating the consistency of their catalog.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like there were any noticeable lulls in the concert. They all carried a relatively similar amount of energy, maybe, you know, crowd interaction notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
But it did a really great job of showing why they've been one of the great rock bands of the past 25 years.
Yeah. I'm gonna agree with Bob. It was definitely Pearl Jam for me, just because like they mix it up, they do a good job of like touching on smaller hits that sort of reward the crowd for being fans for 20 years, and I really like that they end with a it's credited with it's a Beatles song, and they're like
25 years ago, this is the last one we did. Yeah. I got a feeling, deep inside. Oh, yeah.
They just have they do a really good job of touching on the fact that they are, like, an established band, but they're not like, we're only going to play the hits. We're also going to play stuff that is a little fun and that true fans would know. I think that was really cool.
And an established live band.
Yes.
I mean, since their inception, they've been known as one of the live acts to see, one of the highest energy
that's rock
acts
and roll.
You can see. Yeah, I mean, it's everything you want out of rock and roll.
Well, we actually were slated to not listen to this one. We were slated to listen to Pearl Jam Live at the Gorge, which turns out was a, like,
something?
It was 3-hour part of, like, a 7-album box set. And
yes.
I couldn't find it anywhere but YouTube, and I'm not going to sit in front of my computer for 3 hours.
Ain't nobody had time for that.
I mean, I've probably sit in front of it way longer than that, but I'm not going to just listen to one thing.
I mean, we already had 2 89-minute albums.
Which is like, I think that's a good
some
live
monster
album.
Monster albums.
Yeah, which is awesome. Okay, so the last one's sort of a split. We can't really just say, it's sort of two sides of the same coin, so... Do you want to listen to their, like, studio albums now, / would you go to their concert? because I think those are two very different things, but it's sort of, they're both connected to a live album. So like, I've had the experience where I've listened to a band live and I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to hear this stuff, you know, their studio version. And I'll pay the $6 for, you know, at the merch table. And I'm like, holy cow, this is terrible. Like, I remember hearing this in concert and it wasn't complete trash. What happened? This should be finer tuned. It should be more, more intricately taken care of. And it's just like, I think it was just the energy, you know?
That's why I think the answer to your question is Pearl Jam, because you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go to a Pearl Jam concert and you know the range is going to be between an 8 and a 10,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sufjan can get to 10 too, but it might be a 3 in there too. Might be some weird Age of Ad songs
yeah.
mixed in there, and I want no part of this.
Mm-hmm.
As far as listening to studio stuff, even though I'm more well-versed in Pearl Jam, after listening to these two artists...
Mm-hmm.
I have a much stronger feeling of, man, I want to do a deep dive on Pearl Jam again. I just want to, I'll just go straight through on, you know, Spotify or whatever, listen to all their albums, find some more little nuggets,
yeah.
Some deep cuts.
Yeah.
You know, maybe next live album I'll listen to some odd song off of, Binaural or something
yeah.
will be on there.
Which apparently, like, they did a whole thing where, like, they composed a handful of songs according to, like, so there's like the phrase binaural beats is like a thing where it's like it's composed in a certain frequency and it's like it can affect you in a special way. This is sort
of
talking
about the brown note.
I think I'm talking about Salt Lamps. Are you familiar with this? It's in the same sort of, like, I want to call it pseudoscience, but I definitely put it in the quasi science where it's just like, yeah. No, everybody knows about this in the scientific world. They're like, yeah, why are you keeping it? And like, no, because it's like, it has no practical effects. So like, but what about if Pearl Jam made an album in binaural? And they're like, you're saying that wrong. I'm like, that's fair. But I think it's like a mix of between like audio aural, like that adjective, and then binary, because it's like two. I have not done the legwork on this, so I guess it's on me.
I just kind of assumed it meant maybe a different, like almost like stereo, where it's a different sound in each ear, like a quadrophenia type of thing,
yeah.
but half of that.
Yeah, Flamin' Lips are some crazy boys, that's for sure. So I'm going to go with Sufjan on this one for the sheer fact that I could tell his live like concert was completely different. Like a, I'm sure like the light show and the experience of that was totally missing from this. Like, I saw Sigur Rós yeah. in concert, and I think if I would have listened to them live, I've been like, it doesn't sound very good. But like, their like light show was insane. Like, it was a part of the experience that could not be captured.
That's the same with Radiohead. I've seen them a few times
that
live. I've listened to them live
mm-hmm.
on just audio.
Yeah.
And it is not the same.
Right.
Their light show is second to none.
Yeah.
And it's part and parcel of the experience.
And that's even like the Black Keys, like they did a really good, you know, rock and roll live show.
Mm.
Even though it's just like a lot of the time it's just one guy on guitar and one guy on drums. But like, they had an incredible, like, it wasn't just lights, but it was like screens, but they were like stacked on each other and then they move. Like, I was not expecting that, and it could not be captured in audio form, like live album. Like, it's a really good live album because they like kick a bunch of ass, but like you would not capture the full experience. And I think Pearl Jam has more of a full experience than just like you and like 20,000 other people singing the same song. Which is awesome, but like, it's you and 20,000 people just like witnessing Sufjan Stevens' brain. Like, he's like, this is what happens when I sing this song. And it's like, there's like a sweep of rainbow lights, and he's in angel wings most of the time on Wikipedia pictures. I can't.
Yeah, for there's angel wings. And not just a light show, I've
yes,
heard with,
are,
with
yeah.
this tour itself, on the video screen was home videos of him and
oh
his
my god.
Mom's
Maybe I don't want to see
full multimedia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a very powerful experience in its own right.
So I think if Sufjan made his first album today, it would be as equally popular as, I think the pinnacle of his career is probably the Illinois album, but
I think
he would still fit into music today, even though he's, I guess, been around close to 20 years now.
Wow.
Which is, we're real old.
That's crazy.
But, I mean, so two-part question here for you. If 10 comes out today, is it anywhere near as popular? Because I think the answer to that is no.
I'd say, but not even close.
Yes, but who's the equivalent to Pearl Jam today?
There's bands like 30 Seconds to Mars that it's like taken over that sort of
that space
niche. Yeah, and that's the thing, is like they're not bringing the same sort of, I'm not a fan, I haven't listened to them, but I don't think they're bringing the same sort of like respect to rock music, because they're just sort of like riding on the shoulders of giants. And like Pearl Jam was well aware, they like they put in a lot of work to play that hard, and then they just sort of like decided to take it in a like grunge alternative, like content wise, like the lyrics.
Yeah, I guess they're not really contemporaries, and they're kind of old too. But Foo Fighters, I guess, are
in a little bit of ways.
Hey, I feel like Foo Fighters have just been the standard bearers of rock since late '90s or
late
2000s.
But I think just because no one's tried to take it, and maybe it's.
I agree. I think that style of music just doesn't really exist right now.
Because there's a
in any popular form.
A handful of bands that try to do the southern rock, like Silvertide and Blackstone Cherry, like. They're very comfortable trying
shakes or something.
Yeah, they're very comfortable in that, but that's not classic rock either. That's southern rock, and like I was talking about the Black Keys, that's like they're clearly blues rock, and they don't want to do like they had Gold on the Ceiling was their attempt at pop rock, and it just it was popular, but it wasn't. It's not even close to what they're usually do.
Yeah, and I was gonna say maybe one of the reasons for this is the
Matchbox 20, of course,
the proliferation of like streaming services and the internet. But I really think part of the answer is that a lot of the like classic rock gods still tour.
That's it.
Like the Rolling Stones still play music, and people pay lots of money. U2 still gets $100 from some random person to go see them in concert.
Robert Plant.
We're gonna see Torchbearer.
Lufus.
He's not gonna play any Led Zeppelin.
It's incredible. I mean. So that's, I think, part of the problem. And Pearl Jam obviously still tours, as you mentioned, frequently. So I think that's part of the problem, is no one has taken that crown because no one has needed to. But at the same time, there's not any real people at the top of the mountain, you know, creating this kind of music. I mean, you had Pearl Jam and you have Nirvana, and those are two of the biggest albums of all time that come out. Basically back to back. And so it's just not around today.
And it is kind of amazing to me that you have so many classic rock artists, they're still touring, they're still selling, you know, headlining or, you know, second headliner in music festivals. But out of that whole era of grunge, which disappeared and pretty quickly or got corrupted, you know, I wouldn't say Bush is on the same level as you know, Soundgarden or Nirvana. But you have Nirvana, main guy, dead. Alice in Chains, dead. Soundgarden, dead.
Cornell.
Pearl Jam. They're all still alive. Like, they're the last group standing out of that entire scene.
I mean, Soundgarden's a good... I mean, obviously Cornell died recently, but because they have... I think they both have comparable, like, unique deep voices that define the sound of their group, and they were almost indistinguishable one from the other. But I mean, those were definitely, I felt like, and I think they were friends, Vedder and Cornell, because I think there was a lot of overlap between Soundgarden and Pearl Jam.
Definitely for their fans.
And I know that wasn't so with Cobain and Vedder. They had, I think Cobain famously said that they weren't grunge because they played guitar solos. I think they eventually reconciled before Kurt's demise. But, you know, it was the 90s. Everyone was beefing.
Yeah. That's because there was cool nothing. There was nothing to worry about, so they had to argue about guitar
life
solos.
Was great.
Yeah.
East side or west side, Seattle.
Yeah.
East side or west side, Pacific. I don't actually know if there's an east
Very
side or west,
west
side of Seattle.
Northwest.
Yeah.
So, in our last, so we come back to the final criteria. Which one would you rather re-listen to? Because I listened to both of them twice. Yeah, twice. They're 89 minutes, mind you.
Both beastly albums.
Yeah.
Re-listenability, so this is the only Sufjan Live album I listened to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know if there are other ones.
I don't think there are.
There are dozens and dozens of Pearl Jam live albums.
Yeah.
Not that I listened to all of them, but I would. This isn't even the best live Pearl Jam album.
Apparently, it's the Gorge one.
if you've got a week.
If by best you mean girthiest. But if I'm going to listen to a live Pearl Jam album, a single disc, I'm listening to like Live on Two Legs. That came out in the late 90s. It still has all the hits. Just as much, if not more, energy. But even regardless, just taking the two albums on their own, if I'm going to re-listen to one, it's going to be Sufjan. There is... I feel like while Pearl Jam has a much more visceral energy to it,
mm-hmm.
The Sufjan album is just as energetic at like an emotional catharsis to it. Which that I could see that being like a Saturday night, kind of a quiet night type of listen.
Right.
For me, I guess I would say I thought Sufjan, you know, there are four or five songs probably on this live album that I would rather listen to than any of the songs on Pearl Jam. But then there are four or five songs on that, on Carry and Lowell, that I never want to listen to again.
Right.
Whereas I would probably listen to Pearl Jam's album all the way through, cover to cover again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say Pearl Jam for that reason.
Yeah, I'm going with Pearl Jam too, just because, like, that one, the second to last song right before Andrew's favorite Hotline Bling on the Sufjan one is Blue Bucket Outro. It's 12 minutes.
Well, there's like
Blue Bucket of Gold is
like,
5.5.
Excuse me.
It's
an
18 minute.
Yeah. Which
extended.
I go back to like, if I was there, it would be a different experience. Or maybe, I don't really think watching the video would make that big of a difference to me because I want to be there.
Actually,
but like, either,
separate,
either way, I'm totally missing out where I'm just like, I'll be doing a chore. I'm like, is this the same? Yeah, it's the same one. So it's, you know, they're really packing it in at that outro. But like the Pearl Jam one, I'm not going to skip too many songs. And it's even the one, even the one that All the Way, I could just change the lyric, cut and, you know, copy paste Cubs for any other sports team. And I'm like, maybe they will go all the way this year.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? America in the World Cup, you know. Maybe we'll go all the
way.
We didn't
qualify this year.
Maybe next year. The World Cup's every
year.
Right? Oh, what about the Women's World Cup?
That's next year.
There we go.
Hey.
Any year we could go
all
the
way. The real U.S. soccer team.
But so, and that's the thing is, like, I could listen to, like, the, like I mentioned earlier, Vesuvius and 4th of July are, like, so good. And Should Have Known Better is a really good song. Like, they're really, really good. But, like, I couldn't, Death with Dignity. That's the second damn song on this. I don't listen to that out the gate twice.
Yeah,
no, this album pulls no punches.
And I think that's why it would be a better experience rather than a better live album. So, okay, well, this is a tight race, guys. We had Sufjan coming in with 5 votes for the best live album, but Pearl Jam sneaking away with that last one with 6. So Pearl Jam beat Sufjan. Put that on the R key and wait to get annihilated by all the people who enjoy good art. So we decided Pearl Jam's Let's Play 2 live album was better than Sufjan Stevens' Carrie and Lowell live album. So we'll be back in just a second with recommendations for a live album. Okay, we're back. Go listen to both of these live albums. They're both good. But we decided Sufjan Stevens didn't win this one against Pearl Jam. So now we're going to tell you some live albums that we didn't have to think about that we really liked. Who wants to start off?
I'll start off. It was one of the recommendations for this pod, but I've already listened to it 100 or 200 times. It was the soundtrack to I don't know how many parties in college.
Human, robot, human, robot.
That's the soundtrack. Daft Punk, Alive, 2007.
Man, they've been around a long time, too. Jesus. Good God. That's
a goddamn 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Blows me away.
Well, Random Access Memories came out like 6 years ago or something now, right? It's been a while, hasn't it?
Something
when did
like
that come
that?
Out?
Yeah.
5, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember those songs playing during the LeBron James Miami Heat Finals, so that was at least like 5 years ago. Yeah, Daft Punk.
All right, yeah, five years ago.
It's not just an album of single tracks. Every song on the album is a mix between at least two songs, sometimes four.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid, 75 minutes long.
Oh my God.
the mixes between the songs are wonderful. The way the beat will drop out and it'll flip into another song. It's amazing. And wonderful crowd. Just the way the crowd swells and dies away and sings along, and you can hear the party that's happening in the crowd.
Human.
Yeah, robot. Human.
my only thing that came to mind when I was thinking about this, and this is mostly a product of, again, youth. I listened to Ben Folds Live, the 2002 album, like a million times in high school.
I
always enjoyed it. I haven't listened to it probably in 5-10 years, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. But when I was thinking about this, since it wasn't a, this question wasn't a surprise to me like it was last time, Mike.
If you listen to the, I have 20 goddamn episodes you could have listened to. They're free.
I download them. I haven't listened to them yet.
Oh, that's good.
I'm up with the stats.
That's good for the stats.
Do
you hear that, iTunes? Yeah. Ted iTunes out there.
But yeah, I have very fond memories of that album. I recall it having all of the kind of elements that we enjoy about live albums that we've discussed. So that's my recommendation. And I want to plug Mike Bono's 4th of July party next year. Everyone's invited.
I think it's on a Thursday, so it's one day less this year. So that's good.
I'd like to plug on Andrew's behalf the movie Heat.
Thank you.
It's a
greatest
great
live album of all time.
We got two 89 minute albums. That's about half the length of
Heat.
Half
the Heat.
It's packed.
Whenever Mike Bono asks me, "Are you ready to do the Heat album?" my only response is going to be, "How much time do you
have?" So my recommendation is an Avett Brothers live album they did in 2010 at Bonnaroo. It's a recording of their set there. It's one of the ones where they do a wide variety of their albums because they've been putting them out since like early 2000. So they do like a smattering of different ones, and then they'll just spend their time really working out like the intricacies of certain songs, or they'll just explode them like a normal calm like ballad. They'll turn into like a, you know, a 7-minute explosion of emotion, and the drums and the guy with the cello back there. And so I've been to a couple concerts, and they are like completely full of energy, and the crowd just, at one point you can hear on the album someone screams out, "I love you, Scott," and he just like he puts his guitar down, he's like, "Hey, you know what, I love you too," and you're just like, that's really sweet. And then they'll do that, they play certain songs live only, they won't put them on their they won't record them, so that's kind of like a special experience. And it just reminds me of how much fun they are as like a studio band and to see live. So that's my recommendation. All right. So this has been Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
This is Bob.
And Andrew.
We'll see you next time. You guys remember Daft Punk? Good stuff. All right, thanks for listening. This was episode 29 of the podcast. I hope you liked it. Got a new host on there, and Andrew came back. That's good stuff. Look us up on Tumblr. We are comparing apples to oranges, all one word, .tumblr.com. You can check out links for co-hosts and info about past episodes on there. If you have comments or ideas for future episodes of the podcast, send it to us at Gmail. That's catopodcast@gmail.com. Or send us a tweet. That's the Cato Podcast, all one word, and then the at sign in front of it. I think that's how you do it. So if you liked our intro, outro, music bed music, that was from great artist Leisure B. His song Thumbs Up was what we were playing. Go ahead and check him out at humanworkshop.com, and we'll see you next month. Bye.